Hello, world. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show. We are on tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York. And at this time, I'm Hank Key in the studio of PRN.FM with Joe King. If you have unlimited telephone minutes, you can listen to the stream with your telephone on 712-775-6850. And we are taking telephone calls on this show if you wish to comment or ask a question. The call-in number is 888-874-4888. Again, we're taking telephone calls on this show if you wish to comment or ask a question because we are on live. And the number is 888-876-4888.
For those of you who can't listen to the Personal Computer Show live every Wednesday night from 6 to 7, the broadcast is also podcast, and you can hear the podcast on the telephone if you call into 701-719-1003. That's 701-719-1003. You dial this number, and you get into the RSS feed. And you can pick up which episode to listen to by dialing 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 to select one of the 5 episodes that's online, 1 being the latest episode and 5 being the oldest. If you need to hang up or to take another call, there's no problem. When you come back in, you'll resume playing from where you left off. You can rewind or fast forward and get to the exact spot.
And tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to be covering and talking about election postscript, which is the use of computer models and forecasts. And they're not absolutes, but before we get to that, we have some hard news we want to get to first. In Facebook, Zuckerberg made a comment that because people were saying that a lot of the news relative to the election was a hoax. And he commented that, no, it's not. It's only 1%. But let me just, before we get into a discussion on that, let me just say that Facebook has about 1.8 billion. That's a lot of users. Of course, that's worldwide. And they have a major responsibility on their hands as more people look to use social media to get their news. And it turns out that more than 40% of American adults get their news from Facebook. And that's according to a Pew Research Center study. And Facebook says they have an algorithm. To me, an algorithm means, you know, they have a certain criteria that decides exactly what you see on your newsfeed. And what they're saying is based on the things that is discussed, the things that appear, they learn from what you click on, what you like in the past, as well as other signals, and they show you what is called trending news.
The thing to be concerned about there, Hank, is that another study has shown that people who are members of Facebook only listen to or only friend those stories and those people who agree with them. They don't want to get into the other side of this news, the other side of the story. And if what they're listening to, they think that they're agreeing with, carries false information, it's bad. But if it's about a current election, it's terrible.
Well, you call it bad election, but let me talk about results, okay? I Joe's a little surprised when I tell him I watch Fox News. I also watch MSNBC, and each time they do a survey, you know, they say, you know, at the end of the survey, we have the following question: tell me who you favor and who and so on. And in Fox News, it'll be more like 80 to 20% conservative response, saying, it's a conservative response. And the same kind of question on MSNBC is just the opposite. It's 80 to 20% with a liberal response. So, Joe, you're right. What it is that people, if you're watching a certain channel or listen to a certain radio show, you listen to it because that's what you want to hear, that's what you want to see, and you're actually being fed a reinforcement that, you see, I'm right.
That's exactly correct, Hank. And there are very few people like you where you listen to CNBC, MSNBC, and Fox. They listen to one or the other. Very few people read both the Post and the Daily News. They read one or the other. People like to hear that they're right, And the way they know they're right is if everything they read in the paper or everything they hear on the radio or everything they watch on television agrees with them, then they're right. Nobody thinks that, well, I may be wrong, but these other people like me, so I'll stay with them.
Joe, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you had commented, and we talked about it, that Facebook had been accused of, with the ads that they allow, that they allow for discrimination of different ethnic groups. And
no, Hank, I disagree with you. Okay. They were not accused of that. They did that.
Well, let me put it this way. You put a harsher tone on it. But the reason why I say you put a harsher tone on it, because it is a, let's face it, it is a, it is not funded by the government. They have a right to do whatever they want, okay? And,
Hank,
and you made it sound like they were committing a crime.
In a very different way, they are committing a crime on three separate things that they do, an actual crime. But that's besides the point. We in this country have gotten into the habit of saying so-and-so was accused of such and such.
Alleged. The word is alleged.
Alleged or accused. But you know, when people start getting to the point of, and we both know many people who say, he was accused of being believing in the theory of evolution. No, he believed in evolution. Now, you want to carry it with alleged and theory and all the rest of it, fine, but not in front of me. I get
upset.
Well,
but the difference is Facebook is not a government. They're not funded by the government.
No,
therefore, they're not subject to...
Excuse me, Hank, for interrupting. They are subject to the same laws that every newspaper, every radio station, and every television is. There are laws, at least here in New York, and I can only speak for local laws, where you cannot discriminate when you're advertising for an apartment for rent or for sale. There are several other places where it's against the law for you to discriminate. And if you allow the message only to go to Chinese Americans between the ages of 50 and 60, you're discriminating against the rest of us.
Well, let's tell the good folks out there what Facebook has now announced with regards to that.
And then I'll ask you some questions.
No, well, basically what they're saying is they will now pull out ads that exclude ethnic groups or as what they define, they feel, let's say, you know, from their point of view. And again, now we get into a gray area. Who decides and what criteria do they use?
Well, the government decided what are the various ethnic groups, because it's more than ethnic. It's racial, religious, gender awareness.
No, it's not.
That they cannot be prejudiced against.
Actually, I think there was just a recent case where transgender was not in the federal definition.
That has not come before the Supreme Court.
Well, not before, but it came before a federal district court. I forgot what state that was yesterday.
I can tell you pretty certain it was the that state in southwestern Texas, but that's besides the point. The point being that here in New York State, we have certain very specific laws as to what you can or cannot say in an advertisement for real estate. And there were three categories, but I'm not sure of the other two. But I do know this, that Facebook did not say we allow you to discriminate against these people. What they did say is we allow you to choose the audience in such a way that these people would be discriminated against. There's a big difference in that. And now they're saying they won't continue to do that. That's good.
They're saying is that there's only three legally protected categories.
That's what I'm – what are the other two?
Basically, the three is – one is race or ethnicity, which I think is one and the same.
No.
No? Okay. No. Then that's the second one. And the third one, it's not well defined.
Well, I know that you can't do it based on race, religion – that's two, or ethnicity, that's three. But there's two others besides that. Age is a fourth one, and I believe it's gender, which is the fifth one.
No, it's not gender.
In New York State, I believe it is.
Well, but you got to understand that Facebook is incorporated in California, And if you have different laws in different states and you have something like Facebook, which can be accessed from any state, what laws apply?
It doesn't matter. If they're distributing in New York, which they are, and they break a New York law, which they did, they can be taken to task.
Well, you know what? I think they're doing a good thing by backing off of it. I don't know what caused them to do it in the first place, but...
Well, Zuckerberg would say the fact that they were able to use these advertising algorithms for a bad purpose was not their intent, so they're now changing it, and you will no longer be able to use those algorithms to buy who your audience is.
Well, another thing that was more definitively defined in the past week was that Microsoft had made Office... And, you know, the basic elements of Office, which is Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. There are other parts of Office, but most people consider those three elements as the basic parts of it. It's in the student copy and it's in the basic Office. And they made it available on mobile phone, smartphone devices. And they made a statement this week. What they said was, it's only for smartphones. And if you want to put it on a device, and then they because it's, you know, what is the difference between a tablet that you can make a phone call on, or a smartphone that you can make a phone call on? Let's say up to how many inches? When is a smartphone a tablet, and when is a tablet really a smartphone?
Well, have you ever heard the term phablet? Phablet.
Yeah. Well,
what's a phablet?
So what they're saying is, look, Microsoft Office for the Android phones is still available free, but only if the screen is up to 10 inches.
Well, that includes a phablet,
10 and a half inches, okay?
Now, that's reasonable.
And basically, the Chromebook, the basic Chromebook is, right around there, depending on who the manufacturer is, because some of them, they have it at 10.6 inches. Some have it as 11 and a half inches. They're saying, hey, you go past 10.1 inches, they put a limit on it.
The fact that they put a limit on it, to me, is not unreasonable. The last time I heard anything, Microsoft was in business to make money. It's a public company. They owe a responsibility to their shareholders. The fact that they've been giving it away and they're not keeping up with the manufacturing, because phablets, which started out around 7 inches or 6 inches, now are even larger than 10.1 inches. But it's a problem. If I am a manufacturer and I make my Chromebook 10.1 inches and you're a manufacturer and you make your Chromebook 10.2 inches, I suddenly have a tremendous advantage over you. I can offer to give free Microsoft Office. You can't.
Well, now, as you know, the largest iPad is 12.9 inches, and Microsoft is very going to, you know, hold tight on that, saying more than 10.1, no, you have to pay for Office if you want it, okay? And in a way, I don't blame them, because otherwise it'd be silly to say, hey, competition, I'm going to give you something so you compete successfully against me at no cost. So I understand that. Now, but here is the specter that I raised, Joe. The fact that they're talking about the ability to run Android apps on a Chromebook. Now, I'm taking an Android app, and as far as the app knows, it's running on a smartphone. But if it can run on a Chromebook, is it really then really it's a smartphone app running on a Chromebook physical unit? And if it happens to be Office, where does that lie? Silence is deafening.
It lies right in the middle of, I don't know.
Now, the reason why I say that is because you know that as apps become available, if you can run apps on it, you know what? It's only software. Someone's going to be smart enough to say, hey, you know what? Send me $10, I'll send you a patch or send you a utility that will allow you to run the Office intended for a smartphone on a Chromebook 14 inches in size, right?
It's going to happen, but it's always happened that people took advantage of what they were offered in this field of computing maybe in every field, the people who write the apps, and a great, great many of them are free. Go either to Google Play or to the App Store, and you'll see what I mean. They're grateful if you send them $1 or $2, but they're happy just having their name and their product out there. They never intended for it to be shown on a real computer.
Now, you said something to me prior to the show, and I want to follow up on that, is that, you know, right now Microsoft is talking about Office is available free on the smartphone, but what's to prevent them from saying a year from now, or even less or more, to say, oh, by the way, we just changed the rules, we're going to pay for it, because you told me that your wife was using Apple Space, Apple Cloud Space?
Apple iCloud.
iCloud? And now all of a sudden, you mean I got to pay for it?
No, they're not saying that. They're saying...
But there's a limit now they put on it.
They always had the...
They always had the limit?
Yeah, I think it was 5 gigabytes. I'm not sure, but I'm not an Apple user. But she just got a letter saying that she's within 350 megs of the limit, and would she like to buy some more for only $9 a month? And she looked at me and said, I don't want to buy any. I didn't know I was using it in the first place. Well, Apple has a very good system where they automatically back up certain things to the cloud, the pictures and videos and music and things like that. She never knew about that. And I'll tell you that Apple particularly, as opposed to other systems, really appeals to or tries to appeal to people who are not technically oriented. This is just another tool like a pencil or a ballpoint pen. They don't know what they're doing. She asked me, what can we do? All right, this coming weekend I'll look at what she has in iCloud and see how I can thin it down. Or maybe I'll take advantage of, Hank told me about a terabyte external drive that I could buy for $50.
Well, Joe, you know, like I said, there are three things that really takes up space. And very simple, videos, audio files, and digital pictures. Those are the three things.
And she doesn't create any of those, but people send them to her. And
that's a cute little baby. I got to keep that picture,
right.
Okay?
She has, of her grandniece, she has a daily, not weekly, not monthly, not annual, but a daily picture.
And then I said to Joe, you know, I've done a little traveling, and let's be honest, okay? If you visit the Grand Canyon, you could download better pictures taken of the Grand Canyon chasm than you've taken, all right? Or if you've been by the Golden Gate Bridge, you can probably download better pictures and better lighting.
Hank, I got to tell you, that just hits home. We were out about a month or two ago visiting some very dear friends who moved to Arizona, and John has a plane. And he said, hey, would you like to fly over the Grand Canyon? And I said, sure. And we all piled into his plane, and we flew over the Grand Canyon very low, and we went, anything that was legal, we did. And we got back, and I was shooting my cell phone constantly, and we got back, and I looked at them. Three pictures I saved, 127 got erased.
Well, you know why? One of the things I find that is the predominance in the low-end photography, in fact, it's more than half the pictures taken in the world today, is with a smartphone. But the smartphone has many limitations, and you'll find that, virtually there's no zoom lens capability. Many of them don't have image stabilization. But people use it, and it's convenient, and, you know, hey, you could download from the web much better-looking pictures, right?
Yes, but they won't have the back of your pilot's head in it. And they won't have the shoe that your wife is wearing.
You know, we've been talking about Android, but, you know, iPhone is like the big bear in the smartphone market. And then some results came out from strategy analytics where, you know, they measure how many smartphones were sold and how many were Androids and how many were iOS, and you were kind of shocked by the numbers.
I wasn't shocked. I was completely blown away, and I'll tell you why. Every time I want a piece of photography app, here's the iOS version. The Android version will be out shortly. I wear hearing aids. I'm hearing disabled, and I found out that The company that makes my hearing aids has a wonderful thing that works with the iPhone, and pretty soon they'll be coming out with an Android version. And my wife is very much into designing flowers and whatnot, and I found a perfect program on the Apple, but pretty soon it's going to be out. So obviously it was my impression that iPhone was a significantly larger part of the market because everything comes out first on the iPhone.
Well, just to tell you what it is, okay, is that 87.5%, that's huge, 87.5% of smartphones sold today are Android.
So the people who are doing their design for the iPhone first are kissing away the huge majority of the market.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we're going to go to a new segment, but before we do, let me tell you what the new segment is, okay? We're going to talk about the election, and I'm sure people have comments on it, but we have a caller on the phone, and I understand the caller is named Kathy. Kathy, are you on the line now? Welcome to the Personal Computer Show.
Hello to you and to Joe. It's been a long time. I have a question about the Windows folder called Favorites.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I ask because I seem to have made a mess trying to. I overlaid my Windows operating system and with a newer version, and I clicked on the Favorites folder, and all they showed were in shortcuts, and they all had Google Chrome icons,
mm-hmm.
And I decided to click on each one. And it would open in Chrome. And then what I did was I copied the URL so I could get it into Firefox. So I went through all of them, like that. And then the reason I did it was because I once had trouble importing, from Chrome. So I said, okay, I'll get them on Firefox, and then I'll take them in that way. And then I kept trying to import them from Chrome. I mean, from Firefox into Chrome, and Chrome would say that I had them and it was a success, but they're nowhere to be found.
Okay,
and
can I tell you something you probably didn't know?
Well, I just want to tell you something first.
Okay.
I thought I would get into trouble because those favorites might interfere, so I said, let me delete that favorites folder and I'll put it into the recycle bin temporarily, so there'll be no interference, But then when nothing was working, I tried to restore it, and I completely lost it, in the recycle bin. So I don't know the purpose, and why is there a favorites folder? Since I had favorites also in Firefox, how come favorites only showed me what was in Chrome? I'm just kind of confused.
Well, because each one is a separate processor. Mm-hmm. And just to let you know that if you have favorites, which is in either IE or in
Edge.
That if you newly install Chrome or newly install Firefox or newly install Opera and so on, one of the questions they ask you is, do you want to import your favorites? And you mm-hmm. would have done it automatically.
Yeah.
You didn't have to go through one for one.
And
Hang on. Unfortunately, your favorites in on the Microsoft side is considered data. So if you try to do a system restore, it's not going to bring it back.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tried, before I tried doing it manually, I tried doing it, importing them, and nothing worked. I tried it in Firefox. I tried it in IE, because and everybody was looking for an HTML file, okay? And when I thought that was the favorites folder, and nothing worked. And I couldn't locate HTML files because when I sent my laptop in for servicing, they replaced, they gave me an older version of Windows, right. And then afterwards I downloaded the anniversary edition again.
Kathy, let me interrupt for a second.
Sure.
And write down this URL I'm about to give you.
Okay.
HTTPS
mm-hmm.
://
mm-hmm.
support.mozilla.org.
Mm-hmm.
And that will give you, you can click on the heading that says import bookmarks from Chrome. But that's not just bookmarks. That imports all the variable data that you can export from Chrome, allows you to import it into into Firefox.
Oh, I have it. I have everything. They're already there in Firefox. Okay. My problem is now I can't
get. She wants to put it in the favorites.
Yeah.
This will allow you to pull in favorites from a Chrome to Firefox.
No, it's the other way around. She wants to restore favorites.
I was just going to say, you can have a very similar reversal that you go to Chrome and do a search there for bookmarks and tabs, and you'll find that they give you very step-by-step instructions on taking anything.
Oh, I have. I've read all of that, and nothing's working. All you have to do is just click on this thing and say import, you know, and where from, and then whether you want, you know, just the favorites or whether you want history and stuff like that. I just keep
tell you what, Kathy. You know. I tell you what. Send us an email at pcradio.org,
okay.
And we'll try to be specific as to what browser and what condition, okay?
And which direction you want to go and what the subject is.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for the call, Kathy.
We'll try to help you, Kathy. Thank you for the call.
All right. Hey, listen, Joe, you know, last week we had a presidential election and...
Hank, before you go any further, I'd like folks to know that Kathy just called 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
And if you have any comments or, you know, any questions on anything else we've said or we will be saying, because we're going to be talking about the election last week, but we're going to be talking about from a computer point of view. There has been great disappointment because it did not match the polling results. And
if you speak to somebody in polling the way I did, they'll say, of course it matched the polling results.
Well,
the polling didn't say A would be B. They said A would have an X chance and B would have a Y chance. Now, if neither of them got elected, then the polling would have been wrong.
Well, Joe, I think that that's not the way people view it.
You're absolutely right, but people also jaywalk. People also take drugs. People also drink alcohol. I don't do any of those things.
I think the point I'm trying to say is that in any kind of computer modeling or forecasting or simulation, it's only as good as the data that you use, and it's only as good as the criteria you use. And one of the things that that many of the mainline polling organization did was they said, well, who was successful in 2012? And they say, aha, I think it's one of the schools, okay, that was very successful.
The only one that was completely successful was 538, okay. Which was Nate Silver.
Okay, so what happened was that so everyone took the same way of doing it, but they don't understand the criteria's change. Now, before we continue, we do have another caller, and hopefully it's on the subject of elections.
Or anything else.
Okay, I understand that we have SDL on the phone. How are you doing?
Hey, guys, how are you doing?
Yes, you have any comments about the elections?
I've had comments the whole week.
Or are you all choked up?
I'll just say that I think I'm happy Clinton lost, and I'm sorry the Duck won. What do you want me to say?
Oh,
I voted Johnson.
Okay, so what you're saying, it's like me saying, odds I win, tails you lose. I mean, heads I win, tails you lose, right?
That's right, Ralph Crimden. I remember that.
Well, you have any other comments to make?
Okay, not about that, but I have a quick question I'm going to ask you about a computer problem. If you have any ideas, it's Windows 7, a Lenovo laptop, and what happens is it seems to be timed about every 5 or 6 hours. It seems that Windows Explorer stops working. When I double click on a desktop icon, I get no reaction. And I have to reboot the system, and then it works again for 5 or 6 hours. Something around there, you know? And I looked online, did a few things that were suggested, like removing something from WinRAR in the registry and all. Didn't affect it. The way I have it configured is basically the way I have several Windows 7 laptops configured, and they have no problem.
Let me ask, I do, okay? It sounds like, you know, if you had to reboot and you still had trouble right after you reboot,
Hang on. Okay, sorry.
That would infer to me you have a thermal problem, but you don't have a thermal problem or heating problem because you're able to continue to run again. The fact that you're able to basically clear the all the temporary space you were using on a reboot, and what happens is that as you run over a period of time, it builds up the virtual paging space that's using up on the hard drive, and it gets to the point where I would greatly suspect that your hard drive usage is over the 75% mark. Most people don't realize it's not how many gigabytes you got left, it's what percentage is left. And anything that starts moving into the 80% plus range, that virtual paging just use up that space like crazy until it locks up until you can no longer page at all. So, and that's the reason why you, when you rebooted, you were able to run again clearly without hanging up again. And that's what I suspect the problem is.
Okay, because like
what I would suggest you do is you do two, three things. One is clear the space and do a defrag, because what happens is that if you don't defrag it, you have all these tiny little spaces that's also killing you because, you know, unfortunately, Windows, when it looks for space to write on, it doesn't look for available space in terms of what fits what you want to write. It starts writing on the first available space. You need more than that, goes to do another write. You need more than that, does another write. And you can be doing like 100 writes just when you could do one write if the space was there. So that can be also causing the problem. So look very carefully at your hard disk drive, clean it up, and I assume you do backup, right?
It's not much to back up on that. It's not much to back up on that machine. It's basically one I use online, so I don't really save much. I just put it right onto a stick or an external hard drive immediately, you know?
All right, but that would mean to me that you're leaving a lot of little things on your drive, so Hank's suggestion that you defrag the drive is a very good one.
Well, I defrag regularly. I defrag, I do the... What is that? The disk cleanup?
Well,
I do that.
There are three basic tools I recommend. One is it was called a JK Defrag. It's a very good tool to use. It's since been renamed My Defrag. It does it very quickly. The other one I recommend is C Cleaner.
I use that.
They used to be called Crap Cleaner. Now they're more professional. They call themselves C Cleaner. And the other one is a registry cleaner. And what happens is with a registry, most people don't realize what a registry is. It's operating parameters. And every time you, like, say, change font, change size, change a template, it keeps modifying those parameters. And like any good programmer, they said, the boss tells them, I want this program to run fast. It's like telling someone who's doing cooking, listen, I want you to cook this, cook that. They use every pot and pan. And when it comes to washing dishes, they walk away and say, I'm done. You see, you told me to do it, right? So basically,
if I'm cooking, I expect somebody else to do the dishes, for Christ's sake. Come on.
Well, that's what the programmers do. They expect someone else to do cleanup. So a registry cleaner, and the one I strongly recommend is Using, EUSING, because it is not overly aggressive. I find that there are many other registry cleaners, but they are overly aggressive.
I'm going to have to give you my own opinion there. Any registry cleaner is liable to clean the wrong thing. Using does it less frequently, but anyone is liable to. One of the first choices in the Using menu on the upper left is back up your registry. If you don't do that, you're asking for trouble. It's not if your machine will go south, it's when will your machine go south.
And, of course, the most obvious question they're going to ask you is, you do backup.
Yeah, basically, I have
Wait a minute. Basically sounds like a hedge.
No, I have a Cronus. I don't run it every day, though.
Okay. You don't run it every day? You run it at least once a year, right?
Oh, much more than that, at least once a week.
Okay.
Very good.
All right,
thanks for calling.
Okay. And if you do
that call just came in at 888-874-4888, and our phones are open from 6 to 7 every Wednesday night.
Now, let me get back to the election postscript on this, all right? It turns out that the, you know, if you dig deep into it, and, you know, we're not into the polling end of it, it turns out that the there were changes in 4 years. There were demographic changes. There was shift in population. And one of the things that they did not take into consideration was there were many new registered voters. And when they take surveys, they go to the election districts and get the names, but they're not part of the names that they get to do polling. That's another problem. And, of course, what also threw them off were the exit polls. And you know what? When people don't like to be polled, they do one of two things. They shut up or they lie.
And lying is really got a double edge on it, because not only are they not telling anything personal about themselves, but they're screwing around with the powers that be, and they love doing that.
And then what contributed to the problem was, and Joe will add his comment on that, is that Paul Krugman, who is a noted, famed economist, had initially, but then he changed what he wrote, but he initially said that the market's going to crash if Trump wins, and CNBC, Fox Finance News, everyone picked up on it. And you know, as you probably know, last week in the evening, the future market, in other words, outside the United States, who were trading on the stock market, it was down 1,000 points. That's huge. Yes, but by the time the market opened, it went up 600-700 points. And you know what? The comment I always like to make is, I don't know of a single billionaire economist. And, of course, they know where the market's going to go, right?
Well, what happened with the whole thing here is there were Hank has one theory, and every poll maker has another theory, and I have my own theory. But what was going on was the polls were not accurate, and for no other reason than Hank gave before. What Krugman did was he made some very broad-scale projections on the day before the election. And as the election started coming through, well, he did something that I don't expect from most of the pundits. He re-examined what he said, and he re-examined the reasons he said it, and he came up with a conclusion, which he printed in his column on, I think it was on Wednesday. He said, I was wrong, and here's why I was wrong, and here's what I think really will happen, not what I wish would happen, not what you wish would happen, but what most economists will agree will happen over the next two or three years. And what he then said was, regardless of what is done to the economy intentionally or accidentally or arbitrarily, it's only going to be done for the short term. And after 2 or 3 years, this is what's going to happen. It wasn't good news. It wasn't unexpected news. What was really unexpected was here was a Nobel Prize-winning economist saying, I was wrong. Say what you will. There's no excuse. I was wrong.
By the way, the fault is not his. The fault is all those who were following the pack. In other words, everyone wound up saying the same thing. And, of course, they backed off of it by Wednesday. Was it Wednesday evening or when I got home late, Wednesday evening? I looked at the rerun of the cable shows. And you know what the surprising thing they said, Joe?
What was that?
You see, I told you the market would go up. And I said, wait a minute, that's not what you said originally. People love to be able to walk it back and always make themselves profits.
This is true. People don't like to say those three famous words.
I don't know.
I don't know. And so instead of that,
well, I am wrong.
Instead of that, they have to come back later and say, if they had said, I don't know, that would be the end of it. But they didn't. And now they have to say, I am wrong. I am sorry. And very few politicians, very few businessmen, and almost no children under 4 will say that.
Well, the lesson to be learned from all this, and that's why I'm bringing up the subject, is that, yes, it's all related to the data they feed the whatever algorithm they built into the computer model. They do forecasting, and based on what happened 4 years ago, based on what happened the last 100 years, based on what happened to Ohio since 1962 or something like that, you know. And no matter what it is, okay, nothing is absolute when it comes to computer modeling. One of the things I said to Joe was an example of when you do computer modeling, the right way of doing it was the way NASA did it back in the 1970s. In the 1970s, there was the so-called grand tour of the planets, and it would take 10 years to do it, and they had everything properly programmed down to the last, how much fuel they need and so on. They sent up two Voyagers, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, and they would start the, grand tour of, from planet to planet. But they had to make course corrections because they're all unknowns that they didn't know at the time that they did it. And that's what that's a proper way of doing computer modeling. And in a way, Joe, you were right because, originally they said that Hillary was going to win by 83% margin. By 5 p.m., it went up to 97%.
No, that's not what the polls said.
No, hang on.
You used the word margin, and that was not used.
No. What I'm saying is that the modeling kept changing based on new data that came in.
Always. That's the purpose of modeling.
Right. But people got so stuck on what was told to them.
Yes, but people did something else, which you just did unconsciously and unintentionally. You said that you totally misinterpreted the polls. I don't think you really did, but just in speaking right now, you used the wrong word. You said margin.
Oh, yeah. I did say margin for a reason, because if someone says, Joe, if someone says you need an operation and you ask the doctor, what are my chances? If he says 97%, what is your expectation?
No, if he said that, that would be a very bad thing. But if
doctor will ever tell you it's 100%.
No,
you know that.
But what the polls said was there was an 85, was it 85 or 87%?
It was 83%
originally. 83% chance that she would win, and he had a 20-something percent.
Joe, I submit to you that...
Before you interpret polls, you should learn the English language.
Fine.
I don't speak any Chinese, Hank.
Joe, if you need an operation, you ask the doctor, what are my chances of success? And he tells you 97%. What is your expectation?
Let me tell you first.
Wait,
I will not get a pollster to do the operation, ever.
Wait, I have an answer for you. If the doctor says 97%, your expectation is you expect to be able to look him in the face after the operation.
And if
you can't, There's no rebuttal to that.
It's funny because I talked with a surgeon not too long ago about an operation he wasn't recommending, but he was suggesting was one possible route to take. And I said, he said, I don't talk odds. I said, what are the odds? He said, I don't talk odds. I said, well, tell me what I'm up against. He said, there's really only a 50-50 chance of your success. And I said, what on the downside? I know what success is. What is failure? And he said, failure is total paralysis. I said, that's not my game.
Joe, I look at things, when the doctor says it's half full or half empty, okay? To me, half full means success and half empty means non-success,
What it means to me?
Yeah.
The glass is too small.
Oh, by the way, there's a corollary to that. Has anyone figured that it's not half full or half empty? You can always refill the glass.
Or, as I said, get a bigger glass.
We are, we have a number of regional computer clubs, and they do have meetings. And let me just make a couple of public service announcements about these meetings. And if you happen to be in the area and you want to join a computer club, these computer clubs are open to the public. There's no admission charges at all. And they're great to join if you want to find out what's new, because it's not what the journalists write that is good or bad. It's not what the PR people write that's good or bad. You get the good and the bad and the ugly and the beauty of all the different products when you go to a computer meeting. And if you get up and say, gee, I'm thinking of buying, blah, 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 or I'm thinking of going to a certain store, boy, you really get some honest answers. Well, Princeton PC User Group will be meeting on Tuesday, November the 22nd, and it's Writing Mobile Digital Revolution. It's another way of saying what's coming down the pike and new products. And the meeting time is 7 p.m. They meet at Mercer County Library in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Brookdale Computer User Group will actually have the same speaker give the same presentation. Riding the Mobile Digital Revolution on Tuesday, the week after, November the 29th at 7 p.m. They meet at Building MAS, Room 100 at the Brookdale Community College located in Lincroft, New Jersey. Winchester, the Westchester PC User Group will be meeting Thursday, December 1st at 7 p.m., and they will meet at the Keller Williams Realty at 120 Bloomingdale Road on the first floor in White Plains. The Icon PC User Group will be talking about fabulous free software, and it's a Friday meeting, December the 2nd. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. at the Brentwood Public Library, located at 2nd Avenue and 4th Street at Brentwood, Long Island in New York. Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey, their main meeting is on Friday, December 2nd, 8 p.m., Scotch Plains Rescue Squad, Scotch Plains, New Jersey. Danbury Area Computer Society, otherwise known as DAX, has a presentation on cable TV cord cutting. Their meeting time is Tuesday, December the 6th, 7:30 p.m., and they meet at the Danbury Hospital Auditorium in Danbury, Connecticut. Computer Learning Center, this is mainly for seniors because of the meeting time, they meet at the Ewing Community Room, and their presentation is the Mobile Digital Revolution. They meet on Tuesday, December the 6th at 2 p.m., 999 Lower Ferry Road in Ewing, New Jersey. New York Amateur Computer Club will be meeting on Thursday, December 8th at 7 p.m. at NYU, 32 Waverly Place, Silver Building, Room 414. And finally, the Rockland PC User Group will be meeting Tuesday, December the 13th, 7:15 p.m., Rassel Room on the 4th floor, Palisades Moor, West Nyack, New York. And if I went too fast for you, you can go to pcradioshow.org. On the left-hand side, we have a column called Announcements. Most of these are posted under Announcement. Unfortunately, the announcement, what it does is that it takes you to the URL of the website of the organizations, but some organizations haven't updated their website for a couple of years, so if you go to the podcast, you can pick up the information.
Hank, I'd like to point out that a lot of these locations, which are in colleges and hospitals and whatnot, do require a photo ID, official photo ID, a driver's license or a passport, something like that. So bring it with you just in case. And if you want to have your organization's meeting announced here on these microphones, send in an email to pcradio@gmail.com, pcradio@gmail.com, and include all the details that you want us to give out, the subject, the date, the location, time, all of that stuff.
Well, there's a topic that I did want to go over, but I think I'll hold off on that until next week. What I did want to talk about is storage. Now, you know, I'll briefly go into it because it is important, because next week is Black Friday, and people there's certain critical things that they should.
Hank, some people don't know what Black Friday is.
Well, you tell them what it is.
It is generally the Friday after Thanksgiving, and the reason it's called Black Friday is traditionally that was the day that retailers went out of the red and into profit, and all the profit for their company was made from Black Friday through the first of the year. Nowadays, it's not so much, and Black Friday can even be Monday before that.
Okay, now, in what time I have, which is somewhat limited, I'm going to quickly go through this, and next week I'll go into in greater detail. But number one is you're going to find that for Black Friday, a lot of low-cost notebooks. But if you look very carefully, what they call hard storage, they're very careful not to say hard disk storage. It's not a disk drive at all. It's a flash memory. And these flash memory cards, it's like 16 gigabytes or 32 gigabytes, they are not the same speed as solid-state drives, okay? I just want to tell you that. They're slower than a solid-state drive, and they're very limiting. So if you buy it, and in many cases, if it says 16, that's it. You can't add any more. If it says 32, you can't add any more. So be careful of that. That's point one, okay? Point number two is that I know that for the holidays coming up, we like to take a lot of pictures, and I do. I know, all right? And this is a lesson I've learned in the past week, is that I was wondering how come, you know, maybe I'm getting my camera's old. You know what? The color was shifting, and then finally it just gave me blank pictures. Wait a minute, I didn't take blank pictures. I got blank pictures. What happens is that the when you buy a battery, there are two factors. One is the voltage. There's three factors. One is the voltage. One is the amperes rating on it. And the third is obviously size. Now, unlike a flashlight battery or a car battery, the size is standard. So you know what to design. But with cameras, they design the battery to fit the camera, and they come in all different sizes. And what happens is that if you buy it for the original manufacturer, like it could be 2-3 times the price of buying a clone battery. The clone batteries are cheaper. But what I found is that, hey, you know what? You got to make sure that the most important factor of the three, obviously, that's the size will fit, the voltage will be correct, and then you'll find that the ampere for it is too low. Like in my case, I had a camera that required 1,140 milliamps, and I went to B&H Photo, and I asked for a replacement. They said, oh, this will be it. I bought it, and it was only rated 900. I didn't know at that time. And the wear on it becomes very rapid. Now, by wear is that its capacitance, as you use it, each time you charge it, there's a wear factor on the battery, and it lowers it. Now, I'm not going to blame B&H for selling it. Maybe I should, but you know what? I just want to be aware. So if you have a special occasion coming up, you got Thanksgiving, you got Christmas.
But where do they find what kind of battery they need?
You go back to the original information that came with the product, or go to their website and download it if you have to.
Does every battery have on it printed what its capacitance is and amperage is?
Yeah, I have to say the answer is yes, and with a big but. Okay, on the two batteries I have, maybe it's me. All right, have you ever tried to read gray on black?
When it's 4-point type?
Yeah, okay. Now, am I knocking clone batteries? Yes and no, all right? And here's the why, all right? In other words, if you really want to, if the original battery is available, I strongly recommend spending the extra money, get the original manufacturer battery so you have the proper rating on it. You know there won't be a color shift because there's a drop in wattage, because voltage times amp equals watts. If the watts change, it affects everything else. All right. Now, I don't want to go across the board to say don't ever buy a clone battery, because it's wrong to say that. And for one reason is because when you buy a original equipment battery, you can only buy it when it's available, so long as the product life cycle of the camera is there. And if it's not there, guess what? You don't have much of a choice.
That came up to me not too long ago, and I called Hank and I asked, where can I find this battery? I've called everybody. It was a Nikon, and nobody makes it anymore.
Now, as much as I say this for about digital cameras and battery, the same thing applies for notebooks, okay? And now, you got to be careful with some of these I call them white box units, clone batteries, and so on. Look, so long as you know what you're buying, and when they show you a picture, you got to be very careful because, you know, I saw one that says, in big words, Panasonic. I didn't realize. I should have read the case. It says FOR, Panasonic. But the immediate reaction, you go, oh, hey, that's it. That's what I'm going to buy.
The other thing you have to be careful of is which model Panasonic. Two of them may look exactly the same, but the model has an A or an S after it. You got to be really careful. It's not that people are out there trying to steal your money by being crooked. It's not that at all. Everybody is totally and completely honest. They all believe in their religion and their politics. And nobody is bad. Nobody ever has a bad thought. And my fairy godmother said, I will live a long time.
Okay. Let her know when you're 200. Okay. No, actually, next week when I get a chance, I'll expand more on that because. When you're preparing for Black Friday. Oh, the one other thing is that I see a lot of stuff that's saying what is coming down the pike, and you know what? Until it's you see it. Now I saw something. Now last week I talked about the Dell unit. It's a Windows unit for $99.99. And Joe, it's reported that some of these Chromebooks will be available for $95 quickly. Can you tell me in 30 seconds, would you buy a Chromebook or Windows for $100?
personally, I would buy the Chromebook because I have some Windows books that are Windows laptops that can be adapted. I'm curious about the Chromebook because all I've heard about it was negative things, and I want to see if there isn't some positives I can talk about.
The website for the Personal Computer Show is pcradioshow.org, and we communicate via Twitter at pcradio212. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm and at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York. In the meantime, stay in touch, keep on computing, and just remember my mantra is back up, back up, back up. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King and Michael Horowitz, our webmaster, we thank you for listening. Until we meet again, same station, same time, next week, happy computing, and thank you for listening.